Hey, it's Pablo here. I just wanted to let you know that this episode contains discussion of a suicide. So if you just had to bullet point, right, for those who are not so familiar with just the highlights of Archie Manning's football career, what would those highlights be?
The second ever primetime football game, and it was the first one that was really a big deal, was 1969, Ole Miss and Alabama.
Wright Thompson is a native son of Mississippi, and his feature, The Inheritance of Archie Manning, is on ESPN Plus today.
And Archie had 540 yards of total offense in a losing effort, which feels sort of perfect. And he became a folk hero. My friend David Swider, who owns the End of All Music record store in Oxford, is actually working on an album that is a collection of all of the folk, country, and bluegrass ballads that were written about Archie Manning in 1969 and 1970. There's a difference between famous and beloved. And, you know, they were literally writing songs about Archie.
The ball is snapped to Archie, the down it is the last. He throws it to the end zone, another touchdown pass.
He's been famous for 51 years, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, one of the things the piece gets into is he is at once the most accessible person in American sports, and yet there also is this part of him that remains private and unknowable. And that was really interesting to me, but the duality of that.
They wonder where he went. Archie Supermanning should run for president. He wears that number 18 for the big
man. Archie Manning may be most widely known as the father to NFL quarterbacks, Peyton and Eli. Before that, he became a legend in his own right, playing college and pro in Mississippi and Louisiana. Wright Thompson traces the path of Archie Manning back to his childhood and points to where his legacy goes from here. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, December 11th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, right, we are in the middle of a pandemic, and somehow you wind up spending quality in-person time with the 71-year-old patriarch of American football, Archie Manning. So, how did this all come about?
Well, when the thing started, I realized pretty quickly that I'm going to need to figure out how to do stories close to home. And then he's been having all these 50th anniversary things. It started a couple of years ago with the 50th anniversary of his recruiting class. And then last year was the 50th anniversary of his breakout junior season. And so he's just been sort of in the public consciousness around here a lot. And in America at large, Archie is basically known for being the father of Peyton and Eli. But if you're in a triangle between, say, you know, Oxford, Mississippi, Baton Rouge or New Orleans and Destin, Florida, he's among the most culturally important people that exist. And so when the pandemic started, I was like, well, this is somebody that will be in Oxford because they have a condo in Oxford. It's actually next door to my mom's condo, which is hilarious. And I was like, you know, can I come sit on the porch? And so, you know, that's how it started.
So where'd you meet up with Archie and Olivia, his wife, for this piece? I want you to set the vibe for us here. Like, sitting out on the porch with Archie Manning. What's that even like?
I mean, it was, I remember it was, we were, I went, I actually parked at my mom's condo and walked over, and they were sitting on these rocking chairs on the porch, and it's right. I mean, everybody who comes to an Ole Miss football game and walks from the square to the stadium walks right by their porch, and people wave and they wave back, and it sort of feels like an audience. You know, like I was talking just a second ago about the difference between being famous and beloved. I've seen Peyton Manning on that porch, and people always like yell at him, like, you know, what's up, bro, when they see him. But no one would ever do that to Archie.
So there's this elder statesman nature to Archie, and Olivia has something like a first lady status too.
I think in the story, I call her funny and elegant, and both of those things are true. Like, you know, for my wife and her friends, y'all, they love, like, when they're out running or jogging, they love a Olivia sighting. Like, we saw Olivia today. You know, so she's very much a presence about town when she's in town. Their son, Cooper, owns a hotel in town. In each room, there's silhouettes of Archie and Olivia, sort of like king and queen. And, you know, that just mortified his parents. Like, they didn't know that they were going to be in every room. They'd seen one. And Olivia was like, you mean they're going to be in every room? And so, like, you know, they have a healthy dose of skepticism and good humor about the sort of royalty bit.
But Oxford also isn't the only place you traced Archie Manning's story. Tell us about where else you went with him, right, and why you went there.
Well, Archie Manning is from a little town in the Mississippi Delta called Drew. He's always described it as Mayberry, which, given what I learned during this reporting, makes a lot more sense to me now. But, you know, he talks about watching Lawrence Welk with his mom and his dad and all the country people coming to town on the weekend and how they had one stoplight that just had red and green. And he really saw it as this sort of place of innocence, especially for him. And now, I mean, it's not good. Huge potholes, burned out wrecks of houses. The house where he grew up is still there, but it's boarded up and collapsing in on itself. And, you know, when he goes back to Drew, he always tells himself that he's just going to go to the cemetery and see where his mom and daddy are buried and then leave. But he always finds himself unable to not drive around town and sort of swim in the differences between what used to be and what is. When he's talking about the idyllic Mayberry of the Drew of his past, he's not really talking about a physical place as much as he's talking about a time before his own incredible trauma.
And what was that trauma? Because Drew was also the site of this incredibly formative event for Archie when he was 19 years old.
It was in between his sophomore and junior year. He was over at Ole Miss working out. He was going to be a junior, going to be the starting quarterback. He wasn't yet Archie Manning. In August of that year, he went home to go to a wedding, and his dad didn't go. And so Archie goes back to his house alone. He saw his dad's feet dangling off the bed, and he knew something was wrong. And then he saw the shotgun, and then he saw the stick that had been used on the trigger, and then he saw the blood. What he did was so heroic to me. He made some phone calls. He got a coroner there, or the police. He made sure somebody kept his mother and his sister away. And then 19-year-old Archie Manning cleaned it up, because he didn't want anyone else to have that knowledge, to see the thing that he'd seen. And he wanted to protect his mother and his sister. When you look at Archie Manning today, the person you see was born in that room. You know, he told me a boy walked into that house and a man walked out of there, because Archie Manning, star quarterback, you know, father of star quarterbacks, and now grandfather of a star quarterback, was transformed. When I started reporting this, I wasn't like, I want to tell the story of Archie and his dad, or this, you know, terrible thing that happened. I mean, it just, when I put the timelines next to each other, it was when I realized for the first time that when this had happened, and it happened just before he became Archie Manning. I mean, his dad almost lived to see it. And, you know, he wanted to quit and his mother wouldn't let him. And he went back to Oxford, and 35 days after his father died, Archie's junior season started, and it's still the best year in football he's ever had.
Right. The standout game from that season was at Alabama. It was only the second college football game that ever got broadcast in primetime, the first for an SEC game. What was that game like, and what did it do for Archie?
It is 51 years later, and I still remember that he had 540 yards of total offense. My dad used to have a cassette tape of that radio call, sort of like, you know, I saved a Grateful Dead bootleg from the Greek theater. You know, like, it was like that.
There is Manning now.
This is going to be exciting. We're playing Alabama at night on national TV.
Manning is in there. Archie Manning has scored his fourth touchdown.
At night. We let it go.
Ooh, and Manning throws a bullet.
For people tuning in to see a college football game, they saw a pretty good one.
It birthed the legend. Everything that has happened in the Manning family, in the public imagination, was born that night.
And time has run out on the Rebels of Mississippi. A tremendous try to again come from behind by the Rebels. The Alabama has won it 33.
And even the idea of Archie as the sort of being gracious and triumphant in defeat, you know, all those years playing in New Orleans and just getting the crap kicked out of him on that concrete-like floor of the Superdome. Like, the narrative was set. The legend was born that night.
So 1969, that's the year his father dies, also the year that sets him on this road to stardom in football. And right, it is now more than a half century later. So how does Archie think about and reconcile the highs and the lows of everything that happened that year?
That year exists as this sort of sepia-toned nostalgia bit of perfection for Ole Miss fans of a certain age. But inside the actual, you know, life of Archie, it's slightly more complicated. You know, he said 50 years later, it's still my best year. That was a lot, losing my dad and all of a sudden all the success and acclaim. His life is consumed with opportunities, even like command performances, to talk about himself. And he almost never talks about this. I mean, this is his pain alone. I mean, you know, that's what I found really, really poignant, that everything that was possible for his family and for them to become the first family of football, or for people to talk about Archie and Olivia as royalty or any of this, that is only possible because of what he did in that room and then in every day after. The biggest inheritance his children receive is the one they didn't receive, which is whatever it felt like to be in that room and to have to ask yourself those questions. His children have grown up with a present, loving father who says, I love you every day. You know, Archie knows that Buddy Manning loved him, but he never once heard him say the words. And you just can see in Archie's daily life a series of decisions that his family would never feel that.
Okay, after the break, what the Manning family name means in football and beyond.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Archie's oldest son, Cooper, the other Manning brother, as we've come to know Cooper over the years in sports, he told you, right, that Archie is really, really, really good at keeping in touch with people. And that's not just talking about his closest friends, apparently. It seems like anyone he's ever gotten to know ever is staying in the orbit of Archie Manning. And it becomes clear also, right, that you are in that orbit too. You're one of those people. So what's your personal history with the Mannings? How do they show up in your life?
I wrote, I think, the first big profile that anyone ever wrote about Eli Manning. It was for the Times-Picayune when he was, I want to say, a sophomore at Ole Miss. Archie and Olivia knew my dad, and they're really nice. If I have a story that comes out, sometimes I'll get a text message from Archie. Say, hey, great story. You know, but I'm one of a thousand people, right? You know, it's not me. It's like, if you went to the Manning Passing Academy and then you played really good in a Canadian Football League game, you're going to get a text from Archie Manning. Cooper said it's constant contact. He just never loses touch with people. If you're with Archie, you just get used to the background noise of his phone, just ding, ding, that little Apple noise. He's on a text thread with his recruiting class. They call themselves the Dirty 30. Archie sends text messages every day to his children and grandchildren, and sometimes it's a Bible verse, sometimes it's a motivational quote, sometimes it's just a thought for the day, but they're just among the many people getting the text messages.
These grandkids, right? There are 9 of them, I believe, and I'm curious what their sense is of the man they're receiving these daily nuggets of wisdom from. Do they understand their grandfather's place in football mythology and the lore of the sport, his place in the world? Do they get all that stuff?
No, I mean, you know, they call him Red and they call Olivia Go-Go. And it's pretty funny because the grandkids love Red and Go-Go. Eli was telling me that his daughter, Ava, a couple years ago was watching the Book of Manning and seeing that 30 for 30 we did.
Manning has decided to carry the football himself. And you know what that means, excitement. Here's famous number 18, rolling to the more difficult side to throw from, but Manning is on target for a touchdown. How about that Archie who?
This guy running around the field and throwing bullets and playing like Johnny Manziel, and she hadn't put it together. And finally, Eli was like, that's Red. You know, and she sort of looks at the screen like, you know, like it's got 12 heads. And finally, she considers it and just says, Red was good. And I just love that. The other hilarious story that they just don't understand is she was talking to Eli one day and she was like, so you play for the Giants? And he said, yes. And Uncle Peyton plays for the Broncos? And he said, yes. And he said, and Red played for the Saints. He said, yes. And so Abby Manning's father, the grandkids call him Tom Tom. So she thought about this and she said, well, who did Tom Tom play for? And Eli was like, well, he didn't play football. And she's like, not even in college? And he's just like no, not everyone is a starting quarterback at D1 or in the NFL. And they just had no sense of reference for that. Poor Tom Tom didn't stand a chance.
Well, it is looking like all those non-football Mannings like Tom, they're getting increasingly outnumbered, right? Because there are more quarterbacks in their midst. There's all this buzz around Archie's grandson, Arch Manning, Cooper's son.
Pressure. Manning escapes it, heaves a deep ball, and it's caught! Shades of Eli Manning to David Tyree in the Super Bowl.
Because this year in the regular season alone, he threw 22 touchdowns in 8 games as just a high school sophomore.
Forced out of the pocket. Arch throws to the end zone. It's caught. Arch Manning delivers. And it's a
he is getting offers from everywhere, not just Ole Miss. He's getting offers from Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Tennessee, down the line. So it feels like Manning, that name, really is synonymous with football in the South and will be for a while.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, we will probably see another Manning in the NFL, which is a tremendous amount of pressure to put on a sophomore, because maybe he wants to be a marine biologist. You know, who knows? One of the things that Archie and Olivia are really good at, and I think Cooper is good at because he's watched, is to not let any of our fascination with their last name sort of find its way into the actual family dynamic and decision-making process. So maybe Arch Manning is an NFL quarterback. Maybe he becomes the CEO of Tidewater Marine. You know, maybe he is a school teacher. But, you know, who knows?
So I just want to understand also, right, when Archie, the elder Archie, is watching young Arch on Friday nights like tonight, when Arch is going to be playing in his second playoff game of this season, what is Archie think when he's watching him? Is he in this sort of nostalgic, looking back sort of a mode, or is he deeply invested and looking forward to the football career that Arch may have in front of him?
Dude, I think he is fully inhabiting Friday night. I mean, I think, you know, these are Olivia jokes, but she should have kept track about how many football games she's going to, but they are all in. A New York Giants Super Bowl is not more important than tonight's playoff game. They got some business to take care of on the field tonight.
It doesn't sound like they're like winding down, Archie and Olivia.
Well, it's interesting. They are in the process of putting that big house in the Garden District where they famously raised all those boys up for sale and downsizing to a condo a couple of blocks away. They joked that their middle son, Peyton, is the most sentimental, and this just really, really bothered him. And they told him that, no, he, you know, yes, they were aware that he was very rich, and no, he could not buy it, because what the hell would he do with a house at the Guard District in New Orleans? But, you know, that's a big house, and it's made for a family that's growing, and you know, that's not them anymore.
Right. There's this passage that you wrote in your story that stems from when you asked Archie if he had anything of his dad's that he wound up holding on to. And I was wondering if you could read that part of your story for us.
Yeah. Archie keeps a lockbox in a bank in New Orleans. Inside are things he inherited from his father. There are more than a dozen pocket knives, including a beautiful green one monogrammed EAM. His dad always told him a man should carry a pocket knife. His uncle Peyton told him to always carry a handkerchief, and Archie still does to this day. But the real treasure stored in the bank are Buddy Manning's pocket watches. There's one on a silver chain. One is engraved. Another is well worn and scratched. There's one made by the Illinois Company, which started in 1867 and made it until 1938, the time frozen at 154. The Elgin brand is stopped at 1250, the Bulova at 955, the Waltham at 1032. He doesn't think any of the watches work anymore, which doesn't matter much because their value to him was never about their ability to mark the passage of time, or rather, because their mere presence in his life tracks the rushing away of days in a more sophisticated and cosmic way than the marriage of springs and gears ever could. The wristwatch my father left me doesn't tell time any longer either, and for reasons I don't fully understand, I haven't taken it to get fixed. I think I like it broken. This morning I read a poem by Philip Levine called Inheritance. It's about an old Bulova watch that, quote, finally threw up its twin Baroque arms to surrender to the infinite and quit without a word, end quote. That poem unlocks something about the innate human desire to stop time and about the way that few things are more freighted with meaning and symbolism than a hand-me-down watch that no longer runs. Levine speaks for those timepieces when he writes that heirlooms are merely amulets against nothing. Archie texted me a dozen photos just now of him holding those watches, turning them over in his hands, the gold and silver and brass cold against his palm.
Right, hearing you describe Archie Manning, it's really tempting to just sort of get lost in the mist of romance, of nostalgia around him. And I would imagine that as this son, this proud son of Mississippi and a sports writer who's covered this family for so long, you would be sort of familiar with all there is to know about Archie. But what did you learn in doing this story that was new to you?
It's weird. I've spent a lot of time sort of knowing about Archie Manning and thinking about Archie Manning. I was at my house the other day and I found a picture of me and Archie at my uncle's swimming pool when I was like 10 years old. And yet I had never really thought about just the deep reservoir of strength and will that he had to have to protect his family from his father's death and then almost immediately to become the most famous person in the state of Mississippi, which he might still be. It seems to me that he spends a lot of energy trying to be the person people expect him to be, which in a certain light seems like it probably started in August of 1969. I think Archie had to ask himself a lot of questions about why his father was in so much pain that he would choose to exit all of their lives. And he lives with the fact that if there were any signs about his father's suffering, he missed them. And he let his dad slip through his fingers. If I'm guessing, he just was never, ever going to let anyone slip through his fingers again.
Wright Thompson, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Oh, man, thank you.
Wright Thompson's full feature is on ESPN Plus today. So subscribe to get that and all the live games, documentaries, and more that you'll find there. And if you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Spencer Berry, Nicole Fox, Max Brodsky, Troy Farkas, and Jackson Agello. I'll talk to you Monday.